Masechet Challah, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Tesentil, Perek Beis, Mishnah Gimel. The Torah refers to challah in several different places as truma. It uses the word truma. And because of that, we learn that the halachas of challah mirror the halachas of truma. And so this Mishnah is going to list many halachas which apply to truma. And the Torah says applies to truma. And the Mishnah says that it goes for challah as well. Says the Mishnah, ha-challah v'ha-truma. Challah and truma, chayovin aleihem misa. One is liable to death by the hands of Hashem, Misa B'dei Shamayim, if a non-Kohen eats challah or truma on purpose. So again, the Torah explicitly says that with regards to truma, and because the Torah calls challah truma, we learn that this applies to challah as well. Now, if somebody eats truma unintentionally, he has to pay back the value plus a chomesh. So the Mishnah says, v'chomesh, this punishment of adding on a fifth applies to challah as well. Now, these two punishments for eating truma or challah only apply to somebody who eats at least a kazayis, at least the size of an olive, of the challah or the truma. But the Mishnah says, v'asurim lazorim, they are forbidden for non-kohanim to eat even a tiny bit of the challah or truma. Although they might not get that punishment for eating just a tiny bit, it's forbidden to eat any amount of the challah or the truma. The heimlich say kohen, and they are the property, they are the possession of the kohen. Meaning once the kohen has received them, he can do what he likes with them. He could sell them on, he has to treat them with sanctity, so he can't allow them to become tomei. However, unlike other tithes such as maaser sheni, which one is not allowed to sell or do any business with, challah and truma are considered the kohen's possession, and that also means he can buy anything by exchanging the challah for anything. V'olim be'echad u'meah, they are nullified 1 in 100, meaning if 1 unit of truma gets mixed with 100 units, at least, of chulin, then the truma is nullified in the chulin, and we consider the entire mixture chulin. If there's less than 100 times chulin than truma, however, then we need to treat the entire mixture as truma. And that is known as a meduma, which is a mixture of truma and chulin, when there is less than 100 times more chulin than truma. And that applies also for challah, that challah is nullified if there are 100 times more chulin than the challah. Now the halacha is that because of the sanctity and the high level of truma and challah, the laws with regards to their tuma are more strict. Now in general, regular food, regular chulin food, and even most of the tithes such as maaser sheni or maaser rishon, they can only become a sheni l'tuma. A sheni l'tuma means that it's 2 degrees removed from the original source of the tuma. So for example, if the original source of the tuma was a dead insect, something which touches that becomes a rishon l'tuma, and something which touches the Rishon L'tumah becomes a Sheni L'tumah, 2 degrees removed from the original source of the Tumah. Now, if the Sheni L'tumah were to touch regular food, it would not become Tomei, because regular food cannot become 3 degrees removed Tomei. However, when it comes to Truma and Challah, it can become even a Shlishi L'tumah. So if it touches something which touched the original source of the Tumah, then it would still become Tomei as a Shlishi L'tumah, 3 degrees removed from the original source of the Tumah. Now, midrabanan, one's hands are generally assumed to be a sheni l'tuma, meaning if one doesn't know that he touched a tomei item, however, he wasn't watching his hands and being very careful with his hands, and because hands always moving about and touching things, midrabanan, we consider one's hands, only one's hands, a sheni l'tuma, which means that if one's hands touch regular food, the regular food will not become tomei, because regular food cannot become a shlishi l'tuma. However, if one's hands touched truma, that means truma touched a sheni l'tuma, which would make the truma a shlishi l'tuma. And because of that, before one eats truma, and the same goes for challah, utu'unin rechitzas yodayim, one needs to wash his hands, because washing one's hands removes this rabbinic level of sheni l'tuma, which means that if your hands then touch the truma or the challah, they will not become tomei. Now, a kohen who is tomei is not allowed to eat truma or challah. But it goes a bit further than this, because even once the Kohen has gone through his whole purification process, and the last stage in purifying himself is going to the mikveh, dipping himself in the water of the mikveh, but the halacha is that from the time that he has gone to the mikveh, even though he's done everything which he needs to do, he is still not allowed to eat truma or challah, or karbanos at that matter, until that night. So for the rest of the day, he is known as a tavul yoim, which means he went to the mikveh that day. But v'harev shemesh, he needs to wait until the sun has gone down and it has become evening before he can eat truma and challah once again. Another halacha which we learnt when we learnt Maseches Trumas is that if somebody is separating truma from one lot of produce on behalf of other produce as well, you're allowed to do that as long as the 2 piles of produce are the same type. So if instead of separating truma from each one, you want to separate double from one of them, on behalf of both piles of produce, you're allowed to do so as long as you do it min hamukof, which means that both piles of produce are next to each other. They don't necessarily have to be touching, but they have to be right next to each other. Now, if one of those piles is Tomei, it still requires the tithes to be separated. However, there's a concern that if one of them is Tomei, then the person separating tithes from both of them will not want to allow the Tomei pile to go anywhere near the Tohar pile. And therefore, Ve'ena Tolem HaTorah La Tomei, Truma or Challah cannot be separated from a Tohar pile of produce, or Tohar dough, on behalf of Tomei dough, or on behalf of Tomei produce. The reason being that you are likely not to separate it min hamukof. You're likely to make the Tomei produce very far away from the Tohar produce, because you're afraid of making the Tohar produce Tomei, and therefore you're going to come to separate the tithes, shelo min hamukof, not next to each other. So to prevent you doing that, you're not even allowed to separate from Tohar produce on behalf of Tomei produce. Ela min hamukof, rather you have to do it when they're right next to each other, umin hadavar hagomer, and from produce whose processing has been completed, one can only separate maisrus and trimmer once the produce has been fully processed, and same goes for the dough. Only once it is actually kneaded into the dough can you separate the challah. And finally, the last similarity is ha'omer kol garni terumah v'chol asasi challah. If somebody declares my whole threshing floor, all of my produce should be terumah, and I'm making all of my dough challah, I'm giving all of it to the kohen. Says the Mishnah, Omar Klomi hasn't said anything, and it is an invalid designation, and it won't be considered terumah or challah. Unless he leaves some of it for himself, the reason being that the Torah says you have to separate the first part of your grain, or the first part of your dough, as trumah or challah, which implies that you can't separate the entire dough, it has to be a portion. Now it can be a massive portion, 99% of the dough, but as long as you leave a little bit, so that it's considered a portion, and not the entire produce. Perek Beis Mishnah Aleph, when it comes to most tithes, since their obligation sets in once the processing of the actual produce and the stalks is completed, so any produce which grew in Eretz Yisrael is obligated in the Maaseres, but if it grew outside of Eretz Yisrael, then the Maaseres do not apply, at least on a Deraisa Torah-based level. However, when it comes to challah, the obligation doesn't set in on the produce itself when that's completed, rather at a later stage once it's actually turned into flour and then made into dough. Only when it's kneaded into dough does it become obligated in challah. And therefore, peiros chutz la'aretz, if produce grew outside of Eretz Yisrael, but then shenichnasu la'aretz, it was brought into the land of Eretz Yisrael after it was processed, but before it was kneaded into dough, and then it was kneaded in Eretz Yisrael. Says the Mishnah, chayavim b'challah, they are obligated in challah, and this is learned from the Pasuk, which says that when you come to Eretz Yisrael, which I will bring you to, then the Torah adds another word, which says shoma, over there. Now the word over there is unnecessary, and so we learn from there that it comes to include another case where we are obligated in challah, and that is produce which grew outside of Eretz Yisrael. As long as it is kneaded in Eretz Yisrael, it is obligated in challah. Now what happens if it's the opposite case? Yotzu mikan l'sham. If it was brought out of here, out of Eretz Yisrael, to Chutz La'aretz. So the produce grew in Eretz Yisrael. So it's obligated in all the other tithes, and all the other laws which apply to produce. But then at the time that the challah obligation sets in, it was no longer in Eretz Yisrael. So Rabbi Eliezer says it is obligated in challah, since the Torah says when you eat from the bread of the land, you're obligated in challah, which implies that any bread which is baked from Eretz Yisrael produce, even if at the time that you eat it or at the time that you make it into dough, it's not in Eretz Yisrael, it's still Eretz Yisrael bread and Eretz Yisrael produce, and therefore it's still obligated in challah. However, Rabbi Akiva exempts it from challah, and he actually learns this also from the word shoma. The Torah says you're obligated over there, which implies that you're only obligated if at the time that the obligation sets in, meaning at the time that you kneaded it into dough, if it was in Eretz Yisrael, then it's obligated. But if not, then it will be exempt. So according to Rabbi Akiva, it all depends on that critical time when it becomes obligated in challah. Mishnah Beis, so we saw in the previous Mishnah that any dough which is kneaded in Eretz Yisrael, everybody agrees that that is obligated in challah. We had a discussion if it grew in Eretz Yisrael and was kneaded outside of Eretz Yisrael, what's the halacha? But everyone agrees that if it is kneaded inside of Eretz Yisrael when the obligation sets in, then it is obligated in challah. Now the case of our Mishnah is where somebody brings soil, he uproots soil from outside of Eretz Yisrael, puts it onto a ship, sails the ship to Eretz Yisrael, and parks the ship next to the Eretz Yisrael land, and the soil remains in the ship. And he plants produce in the soil there, but remember the soil came from outside of Eretz Yisrael. Now even if you were to consider the soil and that which grows from it to be produce of outside of Eretz Yisrael, that wouldn't make a difference to challah, because as we saw, as long as you knead the dough in Eretz Yisrael, it's obligated in challah, irrelevant of where it grew. The focus of our Mishnah is not with regards to challah, Rather, it pertains to the tithes and the other laws which apply to Eretz Yisrael produce. And so the question of the Mishnah is this considered to be Eretz Yisrael produce? Now, if it grew only in soil from outside of Eretz Yisrael, and the soil was on top of the ship, so since it's gaining all of its nourishment from outside of Eretz Yisrael's soil, it will not be considered Eretz Yisrael produce. However, the case of our Mishnah is where there are holes at the bottom of the ship, and to fill up the holes, they filled it up with earth. Hard pieces of earth, that's filling up the holes. And then on the floor of the ship, they put lots of soil from outside of Eretz Yisrael and plant produce in that soil. So since the soil is on top of earth, and the earth is touching the sea below it, which means that it's gaining nourishment from the soil on the floor of the sea, and because it's right next to Eretz Yisrael's land, it's very shallow, so it's near to the seabed, and that means that Eretz Yisrael's soil is giving nourishment to the pieces of earth in the bottom of the ship which are filling up the holes, and through that, the soil on top of that earth also gains nourishment. So since they are gaining nourishment from Eretz Yisrael's soil, the Eretz Yisrael seabed, it is considered Eretz Yisrael produce. So the Mishnah begins, Afar chutz la'aretz shabab esfina la'aretz. Soil from outside of Eretz Yisrael, which was brought on a ship to Eretz Yisrael. And you planted things in that soil. And as we explained, there are holes in the ship, and it was filled up with earth. So chay b'maisis v'vashavias, that produce will be obligated in tithes, and the Shmita laws will apply to it as well. That's once every 7 years, so you can't work the land. And that which grew during Shmita has special laws, special sanctity, so that would apply to this, just like it would apply to regular Eretz Yisrael produce. Now, Rabbi Yehuda clarifies what exactly we're talking about. Omar Rabbi Yehuda says, Amosai, when is this the case that they're obligated in Maisis and Shavias, and they are considered Eretz Yisrael produce, that's only Bizman Shasfino Geisheshes, in a time, in a situation, where the ship is actually touching the ground. It's touching the seabed. So there's no water in between the earth of the ship and the floor of the sea, and therefore nourishment and nutrients are being given from the Eretz Yisrael seabed to the earth and therefore to the soil. But if it's not actually touching the ground, so then that means that the soil is not gaining nourishment from Eretz Yisrael's seabed, and as such it will not be considered Eretz Yisrael produce, and it will be exempt from Maisis and Shmita. Now the Mishnah ends off by talking about Issa Shenilosha B'mei Peiris, dough which is kneaded together with fruit juice. So instead of adding water to the dough and the flour, fruit juice was added to the flour. Now we mentioned in the previous perek that there's a minimum size of dough which is obligated in challah. Now if water is added to flour, so all of the flour becomes one dough, and it's considered one unit, which makes up just one piece of dough. But when other liquids are mixed with the flour, the dough doesn't necessarily become such a solid piece, which all of the dough is like one piece. Often the flour doesn't stick together as well, and so it could be argued that if fruit juice is added to the flour, then all of the flour does not produce one unit of dough, and rather it's lots of small pieces of flour which are stuck together slightly, but it's not considered one unit, as such, it might be argued that it should be exempt from challah, since it's like lots of small pieces of dough, but not one large piece of dough. But the Mishnah says that is not the case, rather chayeves b'challah, it is obligated in challah since the fruit juices do bind together the flour enough for it all to be considered like one big piece of dough. And the Mishnah adds another law with regards to Tumah, and that is that food can only become Tomei if it has come into contact with one of seven liquids. For example, water, milk, honey. Now one of those seven liquids is not fruit juices. And therefore if the flour was only mixed with fruit juices and no water was added whatsoever, it's just natural fruit juices, then that dough and the bread ultimately will not be able to become Tomei. So it comes out that v'nei achelas b'yadayim servos, it can be eaten with tomei hands, and even the challah which is separated from it can be eaten with somebody who has tomei hands, since it's impossible for that dough to become tomei since it has not come into contact with one of the seven liquids. Mishnah Gimel, when one separates challah mit jabonon, he needs to make a bracha on that separation. One who is not wearing any clothes, however, is not able to make a bracha. And therefore you shouldn't separate challah because he won't be able to make the bracha on that, so he would end up violating that midrabbanon command. Now it's true that if you separate challah without the bracha, it is valid, but lechatchila, ideally, one shouldn't do so if he knows they won't be able to make a bracha. And the main area which we are concerned about are the lower private areas of men and women, and as long as those are covered, you will be able to make a bracha. And because of that, a woman can sit down and then designate her challah, aruma, even if she is unclothed. And she is allowed to make a bracha then, because while she is sitting, because she is able to cover her lower private parts while she is sitting, but not a man, because even when a man is sitting down, his lower private parts are not covered. And because of that, he can't make a bracha. So ideally, he shouldn't be the one who separates the challah. However, if he does separate the challah and doesn't make a bracha, it is valid once he has done it. The second half of this Mishnah concerns Misha in Yochala Sisisose B'Tahara, one who is unable to produce and to process and to make his dough in a state of Tahara, in a state of purity. So for example, if he's Tomei and there's no mikveh around, and for whatever reason he can't appoint a messenger to do it for him, the question is, should he try and avoid the whole obligation of challah? Or should he separate Tomei Challah, give it to the Kohen, who will then have to burn it? So according to the Tanakhama, Yasen or Kabin, he should make the dough into pieces which are only a kav size. Now the minimum size which will be obligated in Challah is a kav and a half. So if each piece of dough is only the size of a kav, then they will be exempt from Challah. But Yasen or Tumah, and you should not make it in a state of Tumah by making it into one dough, because then you will be causing Challah to be destroyed. It's better that there not be any challah in the first place than to get it, to designate it, and then to destroy it. However, Rabbi Akiva says, Yasen b'tumah, you should make it and designate the challah as tomei, v'ayasen akabin, and you shouldn't make it as just small pieces, which are exempt from challah. And Rabbi Akiva explains his reasoning, Shekashem shiru kariyat tahira, in the same way as he calls the pure challah, he calls it challah, and it gets the name of challah, which has holiness and sanctity to it. In the same way, he calls tomei dough, the part which he separates as challah, he calls that challah. Lozoikere challah b'shem, lozoikere challah b'shem. Both get the name of challah. Avol kabim, but pieces of dough which are only the size of a kav, einem chelek b'shem, don't have a part in this name, and you won't even fulfill the mitzvah of challah. You won't be giving sanctity to something which really deserves the sanctity. And so, contra Rabbi Akiva, you should separate it, even though in the future it will need to be destroyed by the Kohen.